FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome, and you are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz. It's the last day of January in 2018. This year is flying by. Well, opportunities are often there, but you're going about your everyday work, you're living your life, and you miss them. And how many of those have we all missed? But the opportunities, the stream keeps flowing. The opportunities keep presenting themselves if you know how to find them. That's the important thing. And speaking of opportunities, we'd like to take this opportunity to ask you to participate in the show. Email us anything. I'm going to have a hotline shortly. You can also phone us. The email address for now, though, is kl@kerrylutz.com. So we're talking about opportunities, how you find them, especially now in junior miners. The precious metals markets are poised to really do something incredible that we haven't seen in 6-7 years. And with me is David Erfley. David, you run a newsletter called Junior Miner Junkie, and that's J-U-N-K-Y. And welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Kerry. Great to be here.
Hey, so it's a new year. You know, the markets are interesting. Precious metals have had a rise, but they've kind of run into resistance, especially silver. What are you seeing here for 2018? Obviously, it's your personal opinion. We're not going to hold you to it, but what's your present impression of things?
Well, I'm tell you the truth. I'm loving this action. It's base building action, and what we had was we had a 180% move in 6 months off the major low in 2016. And that needs to consolidate when you have a move like that. And we've been consolidating now for about 18 months. And the longer this consolidation lasts in the mining sector, the stronger the base becomes. I'm seeing positive signs like quality juniors bifurcating. I'm seeing drill results rewarded. I'm seeing financing. I'm seeing strategic financings by majors, nearly $500 million last year by majors strategically financing juniors. And it's all looking very, very good. We just had the Vancouver Resource Conference, which happens every year, every January in Vancouver, unfortunately on Championship Football Week. And my Patriots are always in it. And I always miss it because that's when the game is during the conference. But this year's conference was really off the hook. I mean, it was over 8,000 people on the first day. It was very encouraging. The appetite for risk is back in the sector. And we've got a sector that I believe is the last deep value sector left in the marketplace. I mean, everything else has gone up. And the miners are poised to really break out here in 2018.
Yeah. Well, I'm inclined to agree with you. Many of the cycle people who I look to, a guy named, by the name of Eric Haddock, especially, he called the rise at the end of September, beginning of January. It came almost as if scheduled. And we're looking at companies here that really are trading at a major discount, especially if we get a little cooperation from the metals markets.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm looking for a monthly close above 1375 in gold for this to start happening. Obviously, it's probably not going to happen today. Today's the last day of the month. And it's also Fed Day, where the Federal Reserve comes out and makes their little speech about what they feel about interest rates and what they feel about the economy. And it never fails. Miners are always sold into that speech. And it happened again this time. And we've got a double whammy this week, as a matter of fact. We've got the non-farm payrolls report in the United States coming out on Friday as well. So that is usually sold into. And then gold usually goes up after. And I'm looking for that to happen again, because we've got the Chinese New Year coming up here. And you're going to have Gold Week in China, where the gold market will be closed for a week. So I see a very real possibility of gold rallying into that week and then finally having a decent correction while that week is happening.
All right. Well, you know, it's interesting. The markets definitely follow a pattern here, especially the non-farm payrolls report. When the Fed makes a pronouncement, it just behaves in such predictable ways. ways. But for the past 6 years, it's just been kind of kept down, not allowed to really get its proper level, the proper price discovery. We're just not seeing it. But hopefully this time is going to be different.
Well, I think the market is pretty much priced in a rate hike for March. So I really don't see the report making all that much difference this week, but unless it's a really, really bad one or a really, really good one, I don't believe that the metals market will react that much.
Mm-hmm. Which is also a sign of strength. I mean, gold has really showed a lot of strength over the past since the end of 2016, right?
Right. And what's been happening since the end of 2016, interest rates are going up. Mm-hmm. And this gold cycle did not start rising until interest rates went up. So rising rates are bullish for gold, contrary to what you've heard and what you've read. And the last time we had an interest rate cycle, 2004, the Fed raised rates from 1% to 5%, and the gold price went from $400 to $750 during that time. So this will happen again. Rising rates brings in more money into the system, and you're seeing inflation, and rising rates always lags inflation. This is what's happening right now.
Yeah. Yeah. Inflation. And also when the banks start to loan, that's when you really get inflation. That's when the velocity of money picks up. We've seen since the crash, velocity of money at all time lows, and probably going to see that start to pick up, not to mention the tax cut and whatever other infrastructure spending there is. All of it's inflationary, right?
Exactly. All that money coming back into the U.S. because of that, because of the tax cut. That was huge for the economy. And you're finally starting to see some weakness in the stock market here. But it's normal because the market is so overextended. I do expect a correction, but after that correction, I expect the market to continue climbing.
Yeah, and I mean, you kind of expect these things. It's what's surprising is that inflation hasn't kicked in to this point, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, but it really has, as far as I'm concerned. You know, I live in Southern California, and everything's going up around me. I mean, especially Obamacare. You know, it keeps going up 25% a year. I mean, it's doubled in the past few years, and I'm now paying $1,200 a month for just myself, my wife, and my 5-year-old. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, that's insane.
That puts a heavy burden on a lot of families.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, my God. An insurance policy that I had when I moved to Florida was like the best coverage under Florida Blue. It was $850 a month, which was a lot of money back then, but it covered everything with a very small deductible copay. Now that same policy is $2,500 a month.
Oh,
so that's the success of Obamacare, right?
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, it's a tax. It's absolutely is a tax, and that's how it was passed. It's a tax.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a tax, and it's very deflationary too. Pulls a lot of money out of the economy, and that people could be using for other things. So, hey, by the way, before we get started, you know, you do this newsletter. I know it's a labor of love. How did you get started in this?
Yeah, it's turned into a labor of love, Kerry. I kind of started it. I kind of went into it kicking and screaming. I started writing a weekly column for Kitco in March of 2016, right after the bull market started. And I really enjoyed that and enjoy it still. And I started to get emails from people who read it saying I should start a newsletter, and I just kept hemming and hawing, and this is how I began in the sector. I started subscribing to newsletters because how I began in the sector was like most of your listeners. I didn't really know much about it. I just discovered it on the internet and really started to get into it. And I just figured I would subscribe to a few newsletters to get my stuff liked. And I learned what I really didn't like about newsletters. So I said to myself, if I'm going to listen to my readers and start this service, I'm going to do it right. So what I've done is I've limited it to 200 subscribers. Subscribers, and I give them a 24-hour notice before I buy anything. Yeah. And I also, it's fully transparent. You have access to my entire portfolio, all my information, when I bought it, when I sold it. And I also keep them up to date on each company. I hold about 30 companies. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a family thing. Like, we're all in it together. And it's worked out really, really well. I started it in April of last year. It's almost full now, and I was up 45% last year.
Oh my goodness. That's amazing. Really good. Hey, so you were kind of called to this. It's really become a calling for you, hasn't it?
Yes. Yes, it has. And I'll tell you what else it's done for me, Carrie. It's made me a much better trader. Mm-hmm. My research is more focused. And since I have to write about all the companies, I'm learning a lot more. And because of this, I want to reward the subscribers who have come in under the introductory rate of $149 per quarter. Once it's full, I'm going to raise it to $249 per quarter. But if you stay subscribed, if you're the first of 200 that stays subscribed, it will be $149 for as long as you're subscribed. The rate will never go up.
Very nice. Very nice. So you really put your heart and soul into this newsletter.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I just got from the Vancouver conference, and I met a lot of subscribers. They were very supportive and very nice. And it's really been a wonderful experience. It's really turned out well for me.
Yeah, that's so wonderful. And you gotta believe that that somehow you were meant to be doing this, right?
Yeah. Now, I mean, it's after so long, I finally figured out what it is I should be doing.
Hey, well, you know, it took me 50 plus years to figure out that I should be doing this, and here I am.
Yeah, sounds like me. It took me 50 plus years to figure out I should be doing this as well.
Hey, well, as long as you figure it out and eventually you do it, that really is the important thing, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yes.
Yeah. So moving forward, so you see some good companies here that are really poised to just go exponential or really high returns?
I do. I don't invest in majors. I've got 16 years of experience now in this sector that I've been investing, and I've been doing it professionally for 10 years. So I like the extremely risky, high risk, high reward juniors, developer explorers, and early stage exploration companies. So I do have five growth oriented producers as kind of a solid lower risk base in the portfolio, but I tend to concentrate more on the higher risk stuff.
Higher risk, higher reward, but exactly. you can lose, right? You definitely
absolutely
taking a higher risk.
Absolutely, risk management is key, and that's what my presentation was about at the recently concluded resource conference in Vancouver. How to build a successful junior miner portfolio, and I talked about the do's, the don'ts, how you should research, what things you should look for, things you should avoid. And it's really worked out well for me. You know, I have my set of rules that I abide by, and it's kept me from losing a lot of money in any one company.
I can imagine. So hey, just tell us your top three rules.
Well, the top rule is if I'm down 20% on a position, I sell it.
No matter what.
The market has told me that I made a mistake. I purchased this at the wrong time. There's always another train leaving the station somewhere else. So get out and redistribute the money into something else. I'm not Rick Rule. I'm not a multimillionaire. I can't sit on a losing position forever and wait for it to come back. You know, I have to make sure that my money is invested in the right companies at the right time.
All right. And so 20%. So that in other words is cut your losses, right?
Exactly. Cut your losses and then let your winners run. And then a rule on that one, on letting your winners run, is many, many newsletters preach, and a lot of analysts preach, and professional investors in this sector preach the fact that you should sell half of a junior if it has doubled. In other words, take your original investment off the table immediately. Mm-hmm. And so I don't do
have
that.
A free ride.
I assess each company company at the time it has doubled on its own merits and where it is in the cycle, where it is in their own particular cycle, and what kind of junior that they are. And if you sell half of a double right away, you can leave a lot of money on the table. Sure, it's come back to burn me a few times, but it's made me more money off more often than not than to hold on to it and wait to take out your original investment a little farther down the line.
Right. Yeah, I totally. It's kind of a quandary because it depends on, I think, the nature of the investor, right? Because if you're the kind who's going to ride it up and then ride it all the way back down, then you got to have that discipline, perhaps, even though you're going to be leaving money on the table. At least, you'll never lose money taking a profit, right?
Right. That's right. That is true. And then my third one is a big one, is never average down.
Yeah.
Averaging down is basically, you're in denial. You're in denial that you made a mistake. And when you're in denial and you made a mistake on a stock, then you turn to hoping it goes back up. And hope is the worst emotion to have when you're holding a stock, hoping that it'll go back up.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Well, look, when you just got a loser and then your emotions kick in, isn't it really hard to just cut loose and try to, just say, all right, I'll live to fight another day. It's always been difficult for me. I don't know about you.
It is difficult, but once you've mastered it, it becomes easy. That's the main thing you have to do, especially in this sector, is master your emotions. You have to pretty much reverse them. Yeah, the best time to buy a junior is when you feel the worst doing it. In other words, if like during tax loss selling season, that is the best time to buy a junior is in December, when, especially this past December, when we had the market going parabolic, cryptos going parabolic, hot stocks going parabolic. Anybody that had a minor, any kind of loss at all, it was sold. Yeah. Fundamentals weren't adhered to. Valuation wasn't adhered to. It was on about 12 or 13 positions in the leading up to the Fed meeting on December 13th. That is the best time to buy. And some of these charts look very, very ugly. And that's when you look at valuation and you look at the fundamentals of the company. And that's a great time to buy. One of the companies that I bought went up 120% in about 4 weeks.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
this is always a good time.
Yeah. The only thing that was interesting is that tax loss selling, and that's mainly a Canadian phenomena to large extent, and it happens on the Toronto venture. So what it is, they have much more favorable rules in Canada than in the U.S. to carry back losses and to carry them forward. And it's become an annual ritual on the Canadian exchange. So people like right in the beginning of December, but it didn't quite last as long as you expected it to, did it, this year?
Yeah. Well, I think it's been starting earlier each year, as far as I'm concerned. I've watched charts religiously, and the companies I have a watch list, and the companies that I own, and companies that I follow, I study their charts incessantly. And this year, it even started as early as Q4, like the first day of October. Mm-hmm. It started where people started selling for tax loss, and I'm glad you brought that up as far as tax laws being different for Canadians as they are for U.S. citizens. And for me, I have to look at cost basis as far as tax, as far as capital gains tax is concerned, because if I hold a position for over a year and sell it, my capital gains tax is only 15%. And then if I hold it less than 1 year and sell it, it's 28%. And that's a huge difference. And it affects a lot in what I do. It affects in how long I'll hold a stock. If I have a really good position in a stock and it starts selling off, but I've held it for 9 months and it starts selling off, do I say, well, I should sell it here and then buy it back after it's done selling off? But then if I do, I'm paying 28% capital gains and trying to jump back in when it's a little lower. Mm-hmm. I would rather hold on to it and wait, and then because I'm pretty sure it's going to go back up later, and sell it after a year,
right?
To pay the lesser capital gains tax. That fact, what I'm doing.
Yeah,
as far as trading
and taxes and investing, really important to always consider the effects of any tax changes of tax rates on when you buy and when you sell, because a couple of days difference can make a huge difference in your tax bill. And you'd be kicking yourself when you look back and said, gee, if I had just waited a week longer, I would have been okay. And
right. And I've learned all those lessons by doing, you know, I mean, everything I've learned in investing, I've learned by losing money. I mean, that's like the best thing you could do in this sector, Kerry, is invest a lot of money in the sector and then lose a bunch of it.
I've been there, done that. And it's not real fun.
That's how you're
going
to learn all those lessons.
Yeah.
And you just stick to it. And once you've lost a large amount of money in something and the reason why you lost it, that is burned into your memory for your life, for the rest of your life.
Yeah, that was why I started selling half. But, you know, half after it went up two or three times, assuming I was that lucky, because I've ridden the parabola, you know, up and down. Up is a lot of fun. Down really kind of sucks.
Yeah, we found that out in the margin call year. That was something when it went straight down for 6 months.
Oh yeah, that was hard. So your site, Junior Miner Junkie, JUNKY.com. And I suggest you go there, check it out. David's really found his calling here. You've really done something, and it's always good to talk to you. We will we'll be in touch another month or two. Hey, take a look at the website, financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Sign up for a free newsletter. Be part of the show. Email us, kl@carrylutz.com. Twitter feed @CarrieLutz. Facebook page, Financial Survival Network. David, we'll talk to you again real soon. Be well, my friend.
You too. Thanks for having me on.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.